This is Digital Story Podcast number 879, January 24th, 2023. Today's theme is, Will Astropad Luna Display Work for Our Photography? I'm Derek Story. Astropad Luna Display is a $119 dongle with supporting software that enables you to turn your iPad or Mac into a wireless secondary display and create a portable Duo monitor setup with the devices you already have. It supports Macs, PCs, and iPads in a variety of configurations. But is it robust enough to use for our photography workflow? I tell all in today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. All right, so here's the backstory. Because, you know, there's always a backstory when it comes to some unique device, such as the Astropad Luna Display. Actually, before I get to the backstory, what is the Astropad Luna Display? Well, it's a little dongle that you buy for $119, and you can get it in different configurations. I have the USB-C dongle, so I'm using it right now in my MacBook Pro, my 2020 MacBook Pro, as a test device, and you'll learn why this is only a test device when we get to the backstory. So then you install software on the main device, in this case the MacBook Pro, and then software on the secondary device. In my case, it's an iMac, 2017 4K iMac, that I want to use as a display, at least for testing, for my MacBook Pro. And the software allows you to, configure both devices and sort of get things the way that you want. It's pretty nice. And the question is it good enough for everyday work for demanding folks such as photographers like us? And that's what I set out to test. Okay, so that's what it is. Now let's get to the backstory. My 2017 4K iMac has a gorgeous screen. I mean, I absolutely love it. It's so beautiful, and it's not too big, and it's not too small, and I don't want to part with it. But the problem is, being a 2017, its brains are getting a bit laggy with today's software. Not to mention, it has what sounded like a good idea at the time, I'm sure, but didn't work out to be quite the good idea. A Fusion drive, which is half hard drive with a little SSD and, I don't know. I could go into the details of how it's supposed to work, but none of us care anymore. Let me put it this way, though. Compared to an all SSD computer, it is not nearly as fast. So here I have this beautiful 2017 iMac that is a little soft in the thinking area and the processing area and all that. So I want to update. I need a faster computer for the work that I do. This is in my studio upstairs. This is where I do recording. This is where I do my Zoom teaching. This is where I do a lot of photo editing. I do a lot of stuff up here, and I need a computer that has better performance. So I'm going to talk about in a few minutes after this story, Apple announced some new M2 computers, both the Mac Mini and some MacBook Pros. And as I said, we'll get to that in the second story. So I was going, wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be wonderful to use my iMac as a display for a nice little M2 Mac Mini? Now, once upon a time, a few years ago, this wouldn't have been a problem at all because Apple used to have this thing called Target Mode. And maybe some of you are still using it today. If your iMac is, 2015, between like 2010 and 2015 or 2016, somewhere in there, in that range, you could actually connect your Mac, your iMac, to another Mac via cable and then use the iMac as a display. And it was just like built into the software. It was fabulous. It was so fun. Well, then Apple discontinued that software function. Now, they said that the Retina displays was the issue, why they had to do it. I don't know. I don't know the real reason. That, in fact, may be the real reason. However, my 2017 iMac with a 4K Retina display does not have target mode. And so I started doing some research on it. It's going, I mean, this is a beautiful display. There must be some way to use it, you know, either as a secondary display or as a primary display for a Mac Mini. I was really kind of surprised to find that there aren't many answers out there to solve this problem. One of them is the Luna display, the AstroPad Luna display. And I was going, okay, it's $119. What if I get it and test it with my MacBook Pro, right? And see if it works. If it works with my 2020 Intel MacBook Pro, certainly the performance will be no worse and possibly better with a Mac Mini, an M2 Mac Mini. So I said, okay, I'm not going to buy the Mac Mini yet, and I haven't put my dollars down yet for the Mac Mini. I'm going to test this. If it didn't work, you know, my option is basically either the $1,600 Apple Studio display, yes, $1,600 for that, or one of the other ones that are available. I think LG has one. Some of them you can get for around, I think, $500 or $600 that are pretty decent. You know, obviously my preference would be to have the Mac Studio display, and I still may go that way. I just don't feel like making that investment right now at the same time that I buy the Mac Mini. I'd like to have a solution that is a solid temporary solution that possibly could evolve into a long-term solution if it worked out for me. Okay, so now you see what my thinking is. All right, here's a bit of a sidebar on this. I don't like getting rid of things that work well. It really bugs me. You know, I've hung on to my 2007 Audi because, you know what? It still really works well. I really like it, and it performs well. I refurbish film cameras for the film camera shop. I'm always fixing things, even if like the fan breaks, right? A lot of people, oh, the fan broke, the blades aren't spinning anymore. And, you know, so it goes out in the dumpster. And then I'm like going, well, maybe I can get it to work. And, you know, you take it apart and you clean it, get all the gook out of there and stuff, add a little lubricant. And next thing you know, the fan's working just fine. It's working just fine. It didn't need to be thrown away. And that's kind of how I feel about this iMac. I just don't feel like it needs to be thrown away. And that's what I have to do because I don't have room for both it or a new studio display. It's got to be one or the other. You know that I've consolidated upstairs at the studio, two rooms into one already, right? So this is already looking like Command Central here. And there just isn't room for two big displays. My heart and my head both wanted to salvage this iMac. And it's not just being cheap. There's a principle to it as well of not throwing away good things that work. All right, so there I am. There's the story. Now, I have the dongle, I have the software, and I started testing it with the MacBook Pro, the Intel MacBook Pro. What did I discover? All right, here we go. First of all, do not use the Wi-Fi connection for the two devices. It will work wirelessly, but for what we do, don't do it. Don't do it. It really needs a wire. Now, they said there are two ways to use a wire to connect it. One is with USB-C, and the other is with Ethernet. So I tried the USB-C, and I still haven't got it to work yet. And I'm sure it's operator error. The Thunderbolt bridge isn't active, and I haven't quite figured that out yet. And so I just want to see if this thing works at all. So I abandoned that, and I switched over to the Ethernet connection for the wired approach, and that does work. I did get that to work. So I've been testing it with that, and it is so much better than the Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi right away is laggy. You know, when your mouse is laggy and you haven't even started doing anything yet, you know it's not going to be good. You might as well just like stop there. And that's the way I felt about the Wi-Fi. The Ethernet is actually pretty satisfying. Okay, so I like it with the Ethernet, and that's where I am right now with it. So do not use a Wi-Fi connection. Use a wired connection, either Ethernet or USB-C if you can get that to work. Second thing, the configuration options are really nice. I mean, you can do all sorts of stuff here with it. You can arrange the displays. You can do mirrored display if you want. I'm doing a secondary display, so my MacBook is my primary display, and now the iMac is my secondary display. So I do the thing where I just move the mouse to the right, and when it goes off the MacBook Pro screen, it goes onto the iMac screen, you know, that sort of thing. But I can arrange the displays any way that I want, and it works out fine. So I love that. And then another nice touch is, once you get this thing all wired up, is that I can use the keyboard and trackpad on the MacBook Pro for both the MacBook Pro and the iMac, and I can use the mouse and the keyboard that I have for the iMac for both devices too. In other words, I could just grab anything that I want here, trackpad, mouse, or either keyboard, and they work on both devices. So I think that's really cool too. I think that's a super nice touch, and I like it a lot. Number three, at first I thought this performance was going to bug me because, you know, my first test was with Capture One Pro, putting it on the iMac, using the iMac as a secondary display. And for a moment there, it felt just a little slower than using it natively on the MacBook. And it probably is. But what happened was, when I just fell into the editing, when I just started working in Capture One Pro, I sort of forgot about all of that, and it really didn't bother me. And this is where it's tricky in terms of making a recommendation, because I think for me it's okay after a couple days of use, but it's really hard to say if it would be okay for you or for your buddy or for someone else, because it's such a personal thing. So I'm just going to put an asterisk there, but using it wired in Capture One Pro and a couple other apps, I just sort of forgot about it after a while. And I think that's the way I'm going to say it. I just sort of forgot about it and just did my work. Okay, number four. A downside is, right now, is that I'm using my Ethernet port for the display, making it not available for other uses. So I was thinking about that, and, you know, let's say I do get the Mac Mini. I probably will be able to get it working with the USB-C ports. However, the Mac Mini, the standard Mac Mini M2, only has two USB-C ports. So one of them, you know, I'm going to need for the dongle itself. And then if I do a wired connection with USB-C, then I'm going to use up the other port to connect the iMac to the Mac Mini. So then I'm thinking, well, maybe the Ethernet isn't such a bad thing, right? Because then I still have a USB-C port available, or I could use one of the other standard USB ports. So, you know, I kind of went back and forth on that. And now my next thing is, I know I have a multi-port powered Ethernet connector, and that I think it has like five powered Ethernet ports in it. And I just have to dig that out. I think I know where it is. I think I have a pretty good idea. So I'm going to dig that out and set it up. And if that works with the AstroPad Luna display, then I'm in business, right? Then I'm in serious business, because then I've got, I'll just plug that into the Mac Mini, and then I have 5 Ethernet ports, and I can do all sorts of good stuff, including my, you know, Synology RAID drive and such. So that part still needs to be worked out, but it's something to think about, and especially if you end up being port shy. You know, if you get the Mac Mini M2 Pro, it comes with 4 Thunderbolt ports, and that's really nice. But you know, that's definitely an upgrade as well, whereas the standard Mac Mini's 2 ports. So you have to think about it. But if you're going to go USB-C with this thing, you're going to use 2 USB ports, one for the dongle and one for connecting to the computer. Right now, I'm leaning toward the Ethernet, and hopefully that power hub will work. That's what I got my fingers crossed on. The next point is that you can take full advantage, in my case, of the iMac's 4K Retina display, or if you have a 5K Retina display, and it's a setting in the configuration of the Luna display. It isn't turned on by default. You have to turn it on. But once you do, it's really good, at least with a wired connection. My Capture One library is living on the MacBook Pro, but it was being displayed on the iMac via the software in with Retina display mode turned on, and it looked great. And it was really fun working on that little bit bigger screen, and then I'd have my notes on the MacBook Pro on the first display, and it turned out really well. So you do have Retina 4K or 5K if you need it. Just remember, you have to turn that on. And finally, it's fairly easy to switch the iMac back and forth from secondary display mode to native iMac mode, or, you know, using the computer that's in the iMac. You just hold down the escape key for the iMac. Just hold it down for a few seconds, and then that disables the Luna display, and you're just right back to your normal display. And then if you want to switch back to secondary display mode, you just launch the Luna secondary app, takes a few seconds, and then you're back up in secondary display mode. So I think that works out really good, and that was one of the advantages to going this route, if it worked, is that I still have my iMac computer as a backup computer that still does a lot of things very well. So I kind of was digging that part. So what's my bottom line? Well, I'm going to go ahead and order the Mac Mini M2. I'm going to get a midline level one. It's going to cost me $1,000 for the configuration that I want. And then I'm done there. So I get an M2 computer for $1,000. I'm going to go ahead and use the iMac as a display. If after a certain period of time it starts to drive me crazy, if I just want that native display connection, I can always go ahead and figure out a display later on. In terms of recommending this for other folks, you know, I'm not going to just do a full throttle recommendation, because I think for some folks, the connectivity might be a little bit more of a hassle than they want compared to just plugging a display into the display port. And I also think that the performance is a step down from what you get with a native display, and that might bug some people as well. Like I said, when I started using it, I was fine with it. But let's see what happens when I get the Mac Mini. And I may change my tune after a couple of weeks of working with this. Either way, I'll post an update and let you all know how it goes. But the AstroPad Luna display, it does give us at least one option when we want to keep using our computers, our wonderful computers, even if their brains are getting just a little bit laggy. Okay, let's talk about what Apple did announce last week. Apple announces updated MacBook Pro and Mac Mini models with new high-end M2 chipsets. And you can read the entire article on dpreview.com. I have a link in the show notes. So let's see what they have here. Apple has updated its MacBook Pro and Mac Mini lineups to make the most of the new M2 Pro and M2 Max chipsets. The new 14-inch and 16-inch MacBook Pro units are available with the company's high-end M2 Pro and M2 Max chipsets, while the updated Mac Mini is available with the M2 and M2 Pro chipsets. The M2 Pro and M2 Max chips are featured in the new MacBook Pro models. The new 14-inch and 16-inch MacBook Pro laptops feature the same design as the previous iterations, including the displays, albeit with improved performance and connectivity. While the general arrangement of ports is unchanged with the new models, MagSafe 3, 3 Thunderbolt 4 ports, and an SDXC slot, 3.5mm headphone jack, the HDMI port is now HDMI 2.1. The prior MacBook Pro models used an HDMI 2.0 port, a much maligned decision that limited the MacBook Pro to a single 4K display at up to 60 Hz. The new models allow for support up to 4 external displays, including 8K display at up to 60 Hz and 4K displays at up to 240 Hz. And then switching over to the Mac Mini, when Apple announced the M2 last summer, many wondered when Apple's popular and affordable Mac Mini would receive an update. The wait is over. You can now purchase the Mac Mini with the standard M2 or new M2 Pro chip. The M2 Max is not an option. It's worth noting that the prior M1 powered Mac Mini wasn't offered with the M1 Pro or M1 Max. You can purchase the Mac Mini with either the M2 Pro chip, the 10-core CPU, 16-core GPU version, or the more powerful M2 Pro with a 12-core CPU and 19-core GPU. RAM is configurable up to 32 gigabytes. The M2 version of the Mac Mini supports up to 2 displays, whereas the M2 Pro can use 3 displays. The M2 Mac Mini supports up to 6K resolution at 60 Hz. The M2 Pro version supports up to 8K resolution at 60 Hz or 4K at up to 240 Hz over HDMI. So the M2 version apparently still uses the HDMI 2, whereas the M2 Pro Mac Mini now has the HDMI 2.1 port. Last paragraph here. All versions of the new Mac Mini include DisplayPort, Thunderbolt 4, USB 4, and USB 3.1, Thunderbolt 2, HDMI, a pair of USB-A ports, Gigabit Ethernet, and a 3.5mm headphone jack. However, the M2 Pro model includes 4 Thunderbolt 4 ports, whereas the M2 model has just 2. The prior Mac Mini had Thunderbolt 3 ports. Like the new MacBook Pros, the Mac Mini supports Wi-Fi 6E and Bluetooth 5.3 connectivity. So I was digging around on both the Apple site and the B&H site for the different configurations. And basically, you can go any way you want with these little puppies. They start as low as $599, but obviously, you don't get a whole lot of SSD storage or a whole lot of RAM at that price. When you start to beef it up, and you know, I was playing around, like I said, I'm going to go with a midline configuration, and it's going to be $999 for me. That's with just the M2, not the M2 Pro. And then if you really start stuffing these things full of goodies, then it's easy to get up over $2,000. But I was pretty happy with what I could get with the $999 model. And if it works with my AstroPad Luna display, then I'm in very tall cotton. If it doesn't work well, then I'll just have to live with my iMac as a secondary display till I figure out the problem. But either way, I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I really do need the horsepower. Really looking forward to having just straight SSD for my storage, for running my Capture One catalogs. There'll be more on this. You can either go to the Apple site or you can click on the show notes to read more about these new computers if you're interested. I have a note about the online printing workshop that's scheduled for March 8th. It did sell out quickly, but then one person accidentally bought two seats and they didn't mean to. So I opened that seat back up. So we do have one seat open for the online printing workshop, March 8th. If you're interested in that event, then just go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on workshops, and you'll see it right there. And that seat is available. And really happy that someone else is going to get to join us. So the online printing workshop begins March 8th, 2023. It's a blast, and I hope one of you nab that seat. Light pollution may be worse than previously thought. And you can read this entire article on petapixel.com. I have a link in the show notes. It turns out light pollution might be worse than it appears by satellite. The problem has been steadily increasing over the years, which creates added difficulties for night photography. Satellite data previously estimated that light pollution was increasing at a rate of 2% annually, but new research puts that number closer to 10%, according to a new research article published in Science. The problem in getting accurate numbers, according to the article, is due to LED lights. This is the equivalent to doubling of light pollution every 8 years. Quote, satellites can measure the light emitted upward, but they are not sensitive to all the wavelengths produced by LED lighting or to light emitted horizontally, the article states. End quote. To obtain the new estimates, 51,351 citizen scientists from 2011 to 2022 were shown maps of the sky at different levels of light pollution and selected which maps best match their views. The gap between the two figures is likely due to the fact that LEDs have become more common and have become a go-to option for replacing older, less efficient bulbs. The increased light pollution can have effects on sleep patterns and even agriculture, as the light can distract insects. However, it also presents an issue for night photographers. While a washed-out sky of an urban area will always make for a more difficult canvas for astrophotography than a dark, remote sky, increased light pollution anywhere will require adjustments when shooting at night. There are light pollution filters, and photographers can upgrade their overall gear. Petapixel's astrophotography guide suggests a number of cameras to check out. Additional light pollution might mean more tweaking of ISO and aperture settings as well before a photographer can take that perfect shot. So I was surprised by the rate of light pollution increasing. I mean, they were estimating it earlier at 2% annually, which I think that's a lot. 2% annually, you add that up year after year, that's a lot. But if it's closer to 10%, oh my gosh. I mean, that's just crazy stuff. And anyone who, you know, engages in astrophotography has probably felt this pain. And then the other thing, I mean, the filters I have for light pollution aren't calibrated for LEDs. I'm guessing that there are LED light pollution filters. But I mean, it's more work now to get those dark sky shots. And I just thought this was really interesting and that you might want an update on it. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to mention our Substack newsletter, the Nimble Photographer newsletter, comes out every Thursday. It's a free newsletter, just shows up in your email box. And all you have to do is either go to thenimblephotographer.com, there's a link to subscribe, or in the show notes for this podcast. We're having a lot of fun with it, and I think you would enjoy being part of it. Also want to give a thanks. We did get a couple new reviews of our Digital Story podcast on the Apple Podcast app. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for those reviews. I still would like a couple more. And so if you have time to go to Apple Podcasts, if you listen on that app, and give us a review, it would be much appreciated. A huge thanks to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support our community and our podcast month in and month out, not only with their $54 annual pledge, but also with their thoughts and their opinions and their wisdom. Lots of wisdom out there. We're having a lot of fun on our Inner Circle sites. If you want to become part of the Inner Circle, all you have to do is click on the Patreon ad tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Nose around, see what you think, and hopefully you will join us in 2023. And finally, a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. These are the folks that not only support our community, but they support everyone who enjoys inkjet printing, not only with the finest paper that you can get, but also with all the accessories to help you complete your projects. Tons of knowledge on that site. All sorts of good little things like, you know, how do I make fine art greeting cards? Things like that. It's a wonderful place to be for inkjet printing. And they are helping us also with the online printing workshops. They have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And if you haven't gone over to their site yet, you need to do it. Spend a few moments nosing around. Just click on the Red River Paper tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. And a huge thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, stay safe, be creative, get out there and take some pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.